problem with the amendment.
Okay, we do have a quorum, so I'll formally call this committee to order. And the chair moves House File 3318, the first engrossment be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. And then the chair moves that House File, or that amendment, the A10 amendment, excuse me, the A10-2387 be adopted. Questions from members? Apparently, it was drafted to the original bill, and this is the first engrossment, so we need staff to change the amendment to make it accurate. Ms. Perius?
Madam Chair and members, we can amend the amendment to the first engrossment, and then on line 1.2, delete the 21 and insert 20. On page, or on line 1.3, sorry, strike the 22 and insert 21. And on line 1.4, strike 22 and insert 21.
Questions from members? Seeing none, all those in favor of the 2387 amendment as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Portman? Any other testifiers?
No, Madam Chair, the reason we're here is the 609.48, the penalty. If this is just another way a person can commit perjury if they falsely state something in one of these documents. So that's why we're in your committee. Just wanted to note that.
Questions from members? Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Either Representative Portman or Mr. Tennyson, how many other states have adopted this uniform law?
This act just got it.
Mr. Tennyson.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Madam Chair, Representative Coles, I think three so far. We just approved this act, and this one of the first years that we had an opportunity to introduce and pass.
Further questions? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, the chair renews her motion that House File 3318, first engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Portman.
Thank you.
Representative Mullery?
All right.
Representative Mullery moves that House File 3137 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. My understanding, Representative Mullery, you have the A1 amendment.
Yes, ma'am. Chair.
Representative Mullery moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Basically, we're just doing something to help with our treatment of how to work with kids in the juvenile system and help them and help society. It's just adding a chemical use screening for when the youth are in the system. We're without that, it's not easy to figure out what to do and what to work with on the youth. And so we have Cheryl Krieger from the Juvenile Justice Coalition here.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Sure. Good afternoon. My name is Cheryl Krieger. I'm the Associate Director with the Juvenile Justice Coalition in Minnesota. And this bill came from our substance abuse work group. We've got 100 individuals on our mailing list, 20 active members representing chemical health, Department of Ed, Department of Human Services, Juvenile Justice, and basically currently we screen youth for mental health, and we just want to add that we're screening them for chemical use. The screening tools that are currently approved by DHS to do the mental health screening can be used for the chemical use screen as well, so we don't need any additional screening tools. We don't really need any additional training for this, and then what happens if the youth is identified on the screening tool with the score that they need some chemical health referral, they'll be referred for a chemical health assessment. And the whole goal is to try to get kids identified early in the system with chemical use issues so that we can get them access to the right services and treatment ahead of time to keep them from going further.
Questions from members? Representative Coles.
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery or the witness, is there anything that prohibits a court from ordering a chemical use screening presently? I know it's not required, but is there anything that would prohibit the court from ordering it?
Ms. Krieger.
Sure. Madam Chairman, Representative Coles, typically the way I'm understanding it is if a child comes into the system and if their offense was related to chemical use, whether they were using or they burglarized to, you know, raise, you know, get money to buy drugs or something, the court would order the chemical health assessment done, which is separate from the screen. The screen just kind of captures kind of red flags, maybe this youth has some issues, so it's a little bit separate. But the courts wouldn't be prohibited from doing the screen, but they typically would go right to the assessment instead.
So. Further questions? Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mulley or Ms. Krieger, I do remember discussion in the Civil Justice Committee about what type of consent, what form that consent was going to be in. I had communicated a desire for that to be written. Is that taken care of here?
Ms. Krieger?
Chair, Madam Chair, Representative. Yes, I checked the way it's done currently is the DHS provides recommendations to correction staff who are doing the screens, and they recommend that they do a verbal screen and then a written, or verbal permission and then written permission before they actually do the screen with the kids. But quite honestly, I think some of the other corrections folks I talked to, they do a written permission slip right away. So it's written eventually. They might do initial verbal and then they do a written before they actually do the screen. So
further questions? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, please come to the table, state your name for the record, and go ahead.
My name is Deborah Wamsley.
Why don't you let her sit down?
I will. I'm a member of Minnesota Association for Recovery Resources for Chemical Health and have worked in the substance abuse field for a number of years with adolescents. And one of the concerns that came up regarding this issue is just early identification of substance use and mental health issues. Typically, when an adolescent is identified as having contact with the legal system, they get recommended for screening or assessment. Generally, if the illegal activity that they've been involved with is clearly identified with substance use. The concern that we have in the trenches and working with people is that oftentimes kids are not identified until much further down the road, and it's much more difficult in terms of intervening effectively with them. So that's part of what this came out of.
Further questions from members? Seeing none, Representative Mullery renews his motion that House File 3137 be recommended to pass as amended and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Peterson, welcome to the committee. The chair moves that House File 3423 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance with a recommended re-referral to the Public Safety Finance Division. Representative Peterson. I believe your testifiers are in the back row, Representative Peterson, so if you guys want to come down, that would be helpful. Representative Peterson. Representative Peterson, you have the amendment A10-2391, and the chair will move that amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm very pleased to be here, and I have several testifiers today. Sorry, I had the wrong room number down, so I've been searching. This bill really is about sentencing guidelines, and it really is about school safety and preventing calamities that might occur in schools by just determining some different sentencing guidelines, particularly for possession of a firearm. And so I am going to turn it over to our testifiers here. Actually, what this does is that it expands or enhances the options that a judge might have in terms of sentencing for someone who brings a gun to school. And in the same sense, it decreases the sentencing guidelines for those who bring replicas to school. So with that, I'm going to turn it over first to Chief Goldstein.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Michael Goldstein, G-O-L-D-S-T-E-I-N. Thank you and good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. On behalf of the City of Plymouth, the Plymouth Police Department, the police departments within the Robbinsdale School District, along with Robbinsdale Independent School District 281, we are here today seeking a change to the current Minnesota statute for weapons-related offenses on school property. Unfortunately, on a more frequent basis, schools are encountering a greater number of violent events that many times involve the use, threat, or display of weapons. Thankfully, most of these incidents are isolated and dealt with within an expedient manner by both school and law enforcement officials. Typically, these situations involve both school and criminal sanctions, whereby students are suspended, if not expelled, and face criminal charges in either juvenile or adult court. For those who are convicted of weapons-related offenses on school property, the severity level, in this particular case dealing with firearms, is a level one felony, the lowest felony on the sentencing guidelines chart, where only a half a point is imposed upon the violator for their transgression under the current sentencing guidelines. Without a significant criminal history, these criminals face little to no consequences for their actions. Keeping our children safe is the top priority for our police departments, and we have worked in concert with the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, several area law enforcement agencies and school districts to create comprehensive school safety programs. Accordingly, we want to maintain an assertive position against those who are poised to disrupt the school environment through their acts of violence. It is disheartening and quite frankly unsafe to reintroduce these individuals back into the school when too little time has passed from their infractions. However, the current sentencing guidelines for these related violations, because of that, there is no opportunity to allow for a more appropriate separation between the violator and the school environment. With a higher severity level, these offenders would encounter greater consequences that could keep them away from these vulnerable atmospheres for a longer and more reasonable period of time. The Plymouth police officers who work in our schools have a number of examples where students who were removed for weapons offenses, charged and convicted, have been able to return to the same environment or to nearby school districts where they can once again have the opportunity to jeopardize the safety and security of our student populations. Therefore, I respectfully request your consideration on this matter in hopes of passing this bill onto the House floor. Our goal is to simply see the guidelines for these weapon-related offenses, particularly on school property, to be enhanced to a higher severity level to better coincide with what currently exists for violations that occur in other public buildings, such as the state capitol and our courthouses. Currently, the guideline for a person who brings a weapon into a courthouse or the capitol is set at a severity level 4. We would argue that a school environment should receive the same consideration. Your attention on this matter is greatly appreciated, and I thank you for your assistance.
Thank you. And Representative Peterson, your next testifier. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Officer Darren McGann, M-C-G-A-N-N. I'm an officer with the Plymouth Police Department. I am currently serving my third year as a school resource officer at Robbinsdale Schools, specifically at Armstrong. Over the past few years, I've seen an increase in severe violent behavior in the school. Too often, juveniles and adults are now turning to firearms and other dangerous weapons to settle their differences. Historically, differences were settled with simply a fist fight or pushing and shoving. Historically, they're now increasingly turning to weapons as a first choice to settle their differences. Just last year, I have personally been involved in two unrelated firearm incidents inside the school while school was in session. The first incident involved me disarming an armed student inside a principal's office while the principal was present. Second incident involved me pursuing a student in possession of a firearm out of the office, through the school, down several hallways, out into the community. Fortunately, both incidents, no one was injured, and both suspects were taken into custody rather quickly by law enforcement. Recent years, school districts have increased spending in enhancing security measures in our schools across the state. Secured entrances, bullet-resistant glass, closed-circuit video systems, additional school resource officers, just to name a few examples. And schools in Minnesota are mandated to practice 5 lockdown drills and 5 fire drills per year. Currently, in modern times, we have never lost a child in a school due to a fire. We have lost children in schools due to firearm violence. All of these security measures are necessary and in place to provide a safe environment for our children. Alone, they are not effective. Strong preventative measures require strong, consistent consequences. I respectfully submit that you recognize this bill and take it into consideration to make the penalties for possession of a firearm in a school consistent with other government buildings. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if Professor Joseph Olson is here. He is. He is also here to testify.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Madam Chairman, Representative Peterson, my name is Joseph Olson. I'm a law professor at Hamline University. I'm appearing here today as president of the Gun Owners Civil Rights Alliance of Minnesota. It was my pleasure to work with Senator Rest in the Senate and with Representative Peterson in the House on this bill, and as well as to work with these gentlemen from the police departments. The bill treats lethal weapons seriously. It treats non-lethal items less seriously. It draws an appropriate line, and I encourage you to adopt the bill as amended. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from members? Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Representative Peterson, thank you for, and Chief, thank you for chatting with me about this yesterday. I think it was yesterday. I think it's a good bill. I look forward to spring it. I guess the only question I have is I do have a concern about the penalties that could be imposed on, you know, a kid in Greater Minnesota who goes out pheasant hunting and you know, shows up at school or late for school, and yeah, they're not intentionally bringing or they forget that they were pheasant hunting over the weekend, and they forgot to, you know, inappropriately, because I'm a big believer in you know, the appropriate treatment of firearms. But are we going to pinch kids who are, you know, make a stupid mistake and unintentionally bring a firearm onto school property? They leave it underneath, you know, they leave it in the trunk of their car, and nobody's there doing anything. There's no nefarious intent. It's just it's a stupid mistake, and I don't have a problem holding a kid accountable for not treating a gun safely. But can you talk to that issue and comfort me a little bit?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Coles. I think if you read the whole bill, you will find the answers, because it really does talk about those people who are students or et cetera who might have reason to have a gun at school, and also the word knowingly is in there. And knowingly says, it implies at least that they know what they're doing and it isn't just an accident. And so I was comforted with this language, and also with the idea that it took care of those students. We're really talking here about students who come with the intent to do bodily harm. And I think those are the ones who we do have to look at the sentencing guidelines and say, okay, give the judge at least more leeway. He might say level one is fine, but at least he can go to a level four, and he can impose the kinds of sentencing that might help the student. It might impose some penalties, you know, for the rest of his lifetime that might help him, or might at least keep him from injuring others.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Maybe Chief Goldstein.
Chief Goldstein.
Madam Chair, thank you. Members, to answer that question a little bit more specifically, in our case, within our community, both of our high schools have trap shooting programs. So there are provisions in place with those who participate that they know the parameters of, you know, where the guns have to be stored, how they have to be stored, and they're not knowingly bringing them onto school to cause some sort of disruption. So I think and within the bill, it does kind of clarify those clubs and programs, again, has that word that I think Representative Peterson pointed out, knowingly, which to us means those with the intent to cause a problem.
Representative Mullery.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm very confused about this. Representative Peterson said intent to do bodily harm, and yet if you knowingly go on school property with a dangerous weapon, that doesn't mean you have any intent to do bodily harm. And Representative Peterson, you were, as you know, on a committee that shot down my bill to require students to be informed of what could get them in trouble with the law. And I'm just wondering what provisions are made to teach students nowadays, because that didn't, to best of my knowledge, this wasn't the law when I was going to high school. And since I don't know about statutes of limitations, but I know people, friends of mine who were used to go over on the St. Paul Seminary grounds, which used to be wide open, it's not like now, and use bow and arrow there. So what are we protecting? This could be pretty All of a sudden, those students are, from what I see, I don't see anything about intent to do bodily harm. I don't see anything about informing students. So we could be capturing in a pretty big net here people who had no intent to do anything other than be there.
Well, Madam Chair, first of all, we're only talking...
Representative Peterson.
Oh, and Representative. You have about 10 questions in your statements here. let's start with the first one. These are sentencing guidelines where all the rest of this language has not been changed, okay? So we're only talking sentencing guidelines and the ability of the judge to make a determination about what penalties will happen. All the rest of this is still in statute. We're just changing those pieces. Now, secondly, when you were talking about your particular issue, I think, in the K-12, if I'm right, this year, I didn't shoot it down, actually.
I didn't say you did.
The committee. I suggested that I would help you, as a matter of fact, develop some curriculum that would fit within the standards that we currently have, because I think it is important that students do know the kinds of penalties, they know the law, they know the issues, and I would agree. I think the issue in the K-12 was that they were standards rather than curriculum, and someone should have really helped you with that before you got into the committee, and I'm willing to help you with that for the next session.
Okay, we have questions from Representative Druskowski and Representative Olin. So Representative Druskowski and Representative Mason. Oh, actually, Representative Olin's is to Representative Mullery's point, if you don't mind, Representative Druskowski. Representative Olin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is directly in relation to what Mr. Representative Mullery asked. As a prosecutor for 32 years and having had some of this statute around in the past, not necessarily the exact words, but while as prosecutor of Pennington County, which is a county attorney's which prosecutes felonies too, I ran into this on more than one occasion, because out in my country, it's not uncommon for the guy to be out hunting in the morning, could be a girl for that matter, a student, and they show up at school and they don't even realize it's in their pickup because they've done this all their life without even thinking about it. And quite frankly, we have prosecutorial discretion as county attorneys, and in those cases, I would like to think that the county attorney will use his prosecutorial, or the city attorney will use their prosecutorial discretion and not prosecute those situations.
Mr. Olson.
Yes, Madam Chairman, Representative Peterson, I was involved with Representative Weaver back in, I believe, 1993 when this statute was originally drafted. You will notice that the possession on school grounds is for those who possess, store, or keep dangerous weapons of various kinds. If you turn on the second page in what is new F, it says this subdivision does not apply to F4. Persons who keep or store in a motor vehicle pistols in accordance with section 624.714 or 624.715 or other firearms in accordance with section 97B045. The determination was made at that time and has been the law for close to 20 years now that there were not criminal penalties for properly stored firearms used for hunting and other legitimate activities. They were excluded from this section. They were left under the control of the school district. And so what subdivision 1D covers are firearms that are not properly stored, properly secured, but are otherwise available for creating mayhem in the school grounds.
Thank you. Representative Druskowski, thank you for waiting. Representative Druskowski.
You're very welcome, Madam Chair. Thank you. For either all of the testifiers, I'm looking at the language about uses or brandishes a replica firearm, 1.10, 1.11. You know, the guideline there is a gross misdemeanor, and I'd be interested in, you know, looking at the level of consequence here for relative to the potential danger that truly, the bodily danger that truly can be caused by this. Can you talk about what categories or what could be included in a replica firearm? I mean, this is a toy gun. Is it, that's what, I mean, that's what it looks like to me. Can you tell us more about that?
Mr. Olson, or Representative Peterson? Mr. Olson.
I guess I've been selected. This is Professor Olson. We're talking about non-lethal toys, essentially. We're talking about Nerf guns, things that shoot various kinds of foam rubber objects out of them that are not capable of causing serious injury. These toys are dealt with and always have been dealt with separately from firearms as toys. This bill makes it clear that they are. Now, toys have two capabilities. One, you can be scared by a toy. You know, a realistic-looking toy pointed at you, this is a pen, but a realistic-looking toy pointed at you will scare you. And you should be protected from being scared. On the other hand, a toy, no matter how realistic it looks, cannot hurt you. And so it should be differentiated from lethal weapons, which can, in fact, cause serious injury and death. And that's exactly what this statute does.
Representative Gruskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Mr. Olson, I'm concerned, actually, that a gross misdemeanor is actually too much punishment for somebody who brings a Nerf gun to school. Madam Chair, I'd move an oral amendment to strike the word gross from 1.11.
Representative Gruskowski, were you aware that it was currently a felony, and so we are currently, it's currently a felony, so we are downgrading it from a felony to a gross misdemeanor currently?
For a Nerf gun, Madam Chair.
Correct, Representative Gruskowski.
Yes, I'd like to move the amendment.
Okay. Representative Bigham would like to speak to the amendment. The amendment is to delete on line 1.11 the word gross, thereby making it a misdemeanor to brandish a replica firearm or a BB gun while knowingly on school property. Representative Bigham.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. And when I first came up here, I actually talked with Representative Cornish about a gun bill regarding replica guns. These are very, they're not real guns. I mean, we can stipulate to that. But when a cop is coming up to you, they can't tell the difference between this. And it can cause, I mean, people have been killed over the use of replica guns. And the other thing that was left out of Professor Olson's statement is that I believe, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a federal law for the production of toy guns that they have to have the orange on the tip of the gun to distinguish that they are toys and replicas. I think that the gross misdemeanor level is fine. I would speak in opposition to Representative Gruskowski's amendment, mainly because I think people have to know the severity, not of the consequence that could happen if a cop has to make that determination as to whether that gun's real or not. So I would not support Representative Gruskowski's amendment.
Further questions from members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifiers, probably to law enforcement more so, in regards to this situation of a toy gun being involved in an incident, how many times have you yourself or you known of other law enforcement that have been involved with toy guns being brandished or a BB gun coming into the situation?
Chief Goldstein.
Madam Chair, committee members, I can't give you an actual number, but it happens from time to time. Airsoft guns, which are a popular quasi-toy, they still do fire a projectile, are very popular items amongst youth who have different, you know, war games, if you will, playing with them. To look at one that doesn't comply with the law that was spoken about with the orange tip, because there are some that are manufactured that don't, you couldn't tell the difference. So it is, I can't say it's an everyday occurrence, but it is something that we do encounter. I think one of the distinguishing features of the bill and the way it has been amended is that we have the felony level for the real firearms, and we're asking to make that a level 4 felony so that there are some consequences associated with it. For the replica, it talks about being used or brandished. And if you brandish a replica firearm or a real firearm, you may not be able to tell the difference, and it's going to cause fear. And in our eyes, it should hold something higher than a misdemeanor. We like the gross misdemeanor piece, so there are some consequences. And then just mere possession of a replica or a BB gun is a misdemeanor. So in essence, we've lowered what was a felony down to a gross misdemeanor and what was a gross misdemeanor down to a misdemeanor. So now that I think we have a more appropriate staging for items that are just merely possessed and or used or brandished, or for the real firearm, no matter what it is, it's that higher level felony. Those are the distinguishing features.
Representative Jackson and then Cornish. Representative Jackson.
I just want to make the point that the statute does say replica firearm and it does not say toy. My son has Nerf stuff. And it doesn't look anything like a real firearm. They're big, they're orange, and you know they shoot foam things. And I would never be fearful. I'm very comfortable with the gross misdemeanor level, and replica means it is replicating the real thing. That's very different than a toy.
Representative Cornish.
Madam Chair, members, just for clarification, Professor Olson, you worked with the author on this, and you're okay with the level the way it is?
Professor Olson.
Well, as always, I would prefer it to be less. But I'm okay with it the way it is.
Thank you. All right. All those in favor of the Drazkowski Amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No. Motion does not prevail. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, further questions from members? Otherwise, we're prepared to vote. With that, the chair renews her motion that House File 3423 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance with a recommended re-referral to the Public Safety Finance Division. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Peterson.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and all of the committee members.
Thank you.
Representative Lesh, if I could have you do a division report on House File 1396. Representative Lesh.
Yes, Madam Chair, members, House File 1396 came through the Division on Crime Victims and Criminal Records last week. We heard some compelling testimony from Representative Paymar's testifiers describing situations where they were terrorized through a pet that was owned by the victim in this instance of the subject of the order for protection. It was passed with no amendments, and I don't have my notes in front of me right now, Madam Chair, but moved it on up to you.
Representative, what?
It was amended.
Yes, it was amended.
There you have it.
So Representative Lesh moves adoption of the division report for House File 1396. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Paymar moves that House File 1396, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Representative Paymar.
Madam Chair, I do have a oral amendment to the bill.
Okay, just one second. Representative Paymar has an oral amendment.
Actually, two oral amendments.
Representative Paymar.
On line 2.30. Strike or and insert and on line 3.32 after the word possession, strike or and insert the word and.
Second.
Okay, Representative Paymar moves that on line 2.30 strike the word or and insert the word and. And on line 3.33, strike the word or and insert the word and.
First or second or?
Representative Paymar, there are three ors.
Which I know, but I think that the last or needs to stay.
Okay,
on line 3.33.
So you would be striking
both ors? But maybe I'd ask the council's help on that.
Okay.
I believe the intent is that when a petitioner is asking for reliefs, that the judge can order any one of those. So we're adding an additional relief. And I think the last one is 7, so maybe I'm wrong on that.
Ms.
Perius, is it?
Madam Chair, members, I believe we're trying to reinstate the and that was on line 3.31. So with these new clauses on 3.33, it would be to delete the very last or and insert and.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Question from members, or the chair, or Representative Paymar moves the oral amendment to get the bill in the shape he would like it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Paymar.
Madam Chair, members, I know some of you have heard the bill before, so we'll be brief with our testimony. Let me just clearly tell you what this bill does not do. This does not elevate the status of a pet to a human being. Relative to obtaining a civil order for protection in court. What the bill does, as most of you know, when a petitioner who is threatened or has been abused in the household is seeking an ex parte order to provide some safety for him or herself, has the ability to ask the court through an affidavit and through a petition to grant certain reliefs, and that could be anything from restraining the abusing party from committing further acts of violence to coming to the petitioner's place of employment. As I've said in past committees, this is an extremely difficult issue for victims of domestic violence who are seeking an order for protection, knowing, much like with their child, that their pet could either be abused or taken or killed to prevent her from getting out of that abusive relationship. In the last committee, I talked to, and for just full disclosure here, I've worked in the domestic violence field for a long, long time. I helped organize the Domestic Abuse Intervention Project in Duluth in the early 80s, and I currently work for the Battered Women's Justice Project. And I just want to say that I have enough stories from among my direct service with batterers as well as victims that are just hair-raising. I had a situation where this woman was threatening to leave her partner, her husband, and she had these two puppies that she dearly loved, and the man said, "I want you to go out into the garage. I have something for you." And she went out into the garage, and the two puppies' heads were bashed in with the hammer. And that was a very clear warning to her that if she was to leave that abusive relationship, that that might happen to her. And I can tell you, if you go to any battered women's shelter and ask advocates who work with battered women, they will tell you story after story of women, primarily, who have stayed in abusive relationships way too long because of the threat of losing their child or losing their pet, which to them is much like a child. So that's all this bill does. It adds an additional relief for the court to grant possession to the petitioner when they're seeking an order for protection. I understand there's an amendment on part of this bill, and I just ask Sarah Wolf from the Ramsey County Attorney's Office to provide a brief comment, and I also have just someone from the Battered Women's Legal Advocacy Project who's here to answer any questions.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
My name is Sarah Wolf. Thank you, members of the committee and Madam Chair. I'm here on behalf of the Ramsey County Attorney's Office because our office sees the cases that Representative Michael Paymar was just talking about. We see the way abusers will seek additional ways to hurt and control their victims, whether they're spouses or children. And we know that battered individuals will delay leaving and seeking safety for themselves in these situations. So this bill gives the civil court judge, the victim, a tool to prevent this kind of harm, and we strongly support it.
Thank you. Representative Paymar, anything else?
This is Rihanna Fuller from the Battered Women's Legal Advocacy.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Raina Fuller.
Okay.
I'm here to answer any questions as pertaining to this bill. And to speak on behalf of domestic violence victims throughout the state of Minnesota who have made decisions to stay in their relationships or did not believe that they could get relief through an order of protection to help protect their pets and be able to find safety.
Thank you. Representative Begum.
Madam Chair, I actually have an oral amendment.
Representative Begum.
Chair Paymar, I really like your bill, and I know you've tried to do this a couple years, and I'm trying to, as Representative Coles did to me earlier today, make the good bill better. And
I hope you have more success.
Representative Begum.
So I would like to offer the following oral amendment. On line 2.31, delete the words harassing, comma, interfere with, comma. And delete the comma after the word abusing. So there, and then the other one, the other place that this occurs is on line 4.1. So I again would delete the words harassing, comma, interfering with, comma. And delete the comma after the word abusing. So therefore, those two sentences would now read, direct the respondent to refrain from abusing or injuring any pet.
Questions from members? Representative Paymar? Representative Lesh?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bingham, I'm trying to figure out your point. Isn't that, wouldn't that then, that's already illegal, what you're trying to do. It's already illegal to injure or abuse a pet without legal justification. So to me, you essentially gutted the point of the bill by doing that. I mean, unless I'm missing something. Maybe you can explain that.
Representative Begum.
Madam Chair, can I?
Representative Paymar.
I don't, you know, I'm fine with the language. I don't think this guts the bill at all. I think the issue without legal justification had to do if the animal was to attack you for some reason, you know, not that you should be around the household, but there were all kinds of scenarios that came up in one of the committees about what if you were in a dog park or something, and it's, I don't know, but I'm fine. If this is helpful, I don't have objections to the amendment.
And Madam Chair and Representative Lesh, that's my point. I'm trying to bring together the two groups that I think have concerns over this bill, and because I really want to see this bill go forward, and I think there that was a big concern of some folks of some of the examples that Chair Paymar had cited.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Paymar,
if I may, no, that's fine.
All right. All those in favor of the oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Representative Cornish.
Madam Chair and members, kind of threw me a curveball there. This amendment here does the same thing, only it's in addition. It puts the emphasis on physically abusing the pet, not harassing and interfering. The wording's a little different from the previous amendment. It's an A2 amendment. I would offer that and ask for a roll call vote.
All right. Representative Cornish offers the A2 amendment. Representative Paymar.
Madam Chair, I'll incorporate I would support the Cornish amendment.
All right. Representative Cornish, if Representative Paymar is willing to accept the amendment, are you willing to withdraw the request for roll call? You're winning.
Yes for an answer.
Okay. It doesn't happen to Republicans.
Yeah, he got thrown a curveball. You guys think about us a curveball.
All right, Representative Cornish withdraws his request for a roll call. Anyone would like to speak to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Representative Paymar, closing.
Madam Chair, I don't know. I think that I just want to reemphasize that a lot of battered women are going to be safer if you pass this bill. It'll provide an additional relief for the court, and I think we've tried to accommodate those who've criticized the bill, and I just appreciate your support.
All right. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Mr. Olson, please come to the table, state your name for the record, and go ahead.
Thank you very much. I'm Professor Joel Olson from Hamline Law School, speaking on behalf of the Gun Owners Civil Rights Alliance.
Representative Paymar stole my thunder, and so I will be very short with the amendment. I think it's a fine bill.
Thank you.
Well, this is going to be a new one.
We need a picture of that. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just speak opposed to the bill. We still have a bill that's got strong animal rights components to it. The Humane Society of the United States is very much in favor of this bill. And I mean, if we're going to turn live property into a piece that can be used in an ex parte order for protection, where are refrigerators and cars and other things that that people are connected to? That's all, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When the lion lays down with the lamb, I'm going to be all for this bill. Representative Paymar, good bill. Thank you for working on it and addressing some of the, I wouldn't characterize them as criticisms, but concerns raised by people who had some real concerns, and I appreciate your willingness to address them. I look forward to supporting your bill today and when we move it forward to the floor.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, members, I disagree with Representative Druskowski's characterization. I, too, think that people deserve the absolute highest level of protection in the law. And under law, animals are chattel. They are property. But they're a unique kind in that you can have a relationship with them. And that, in itself, presents a unique opportunity for an abuser to terrorize a victim. And that's what this bill is about. It's not about conferring any status to a pet. It's about offering the protections to victims of domestic violence. And I think it's a very important protection, taking into consideration the stories that we've heard in my division and also the stories that were reiterated here by Representative Paymar. So despite the fact that I disagreed with the amendments because I think it weakens the intent, I do support the bill.
Representative Bigham.
Madam Chair and Chair Paymar, I just want to thank you for your work and the work of the stakeholders in the group, but more importantly, the benefits that this will have on battered women and the help that this will bring to relieve them of those situations. So thank you for your advocacy and your stakeholders.
Representative Olin, final comment. And
thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, Representative Paymar, for accepting these two amendments, although we're going to have to do some wording, not check on the exact wording when we get done, but I think these resolve the problems that I had with this bill, and I thank you for doing so.
Representative Paymar, closing comment? All right. Representative Paymar renews his motion that House File 1396, First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Bigham moves the minutes of Tuesday, March 16th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, this is our last meeting. I don't believe we'll be having another one unless we end up getting something re-referred to our committee from the floor. I want to thank all the members of the committee. It has been a wonderful experience. And I just have appreciated very much. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, on behalf of the minority, I'd like to extend our thanks and your willingness to provide us the opportunity to be a part of it and to share in the pizza.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments from members? Seeing none, with that, this meeting is adjourned.